Maggie gives a sideways glance as she shares the secrets of her romance. The lights are low, there's music on. The setting's romantic. He'll soon be home. I hope he likes it. We'll wait and see. In he comes with a package for me. I hope it is roses red picked just for me. No, it's only red cabbage to cook for his tea. But still I am hopeful with soft candle lights and dreamy sweet music for dreamy delights. Coat on the floor as he looks around, on go the lights, off go the sound. Well, he starts bleating in tired grumpy tone, I like to see what I'm eating in my own home. Now the TV is blaring, and gone are my wishes. I reach out my loving arms to a sink full of dishes. When I tried to communicate, I just talked to myself, so he bought some chocolates and ate them himself. He's good at suggesting to grant in my every wish. When I suggest cooking dinner, he buys chips and fish. So here I am sulking, 'cause the TV is cuter. I dread when my Egbert buys a computer. Egbert says yes when I ask him to help, but he's still sitting still when I do it myself. So I go off to bed, all alone, all alone. Where's Egbert, my husband? The romance is gone, but he's still attached to that old lounge room sofa. I wonder about life when his life is over. Oh, perish the thought. I don't wish him dead. I only wish he was living instead. He's now no good for anything. There's only one course. I'll pawn off the kids and get a divorce. Welcome to today's seminar. What is divorce recovery? To use the term divorce recovery presents a basic assumption that there exists victims of divorce that would make recovery necessary. Every divorce has its victims. Like any major life event, there is a loss to contend with. With adolescence is the loss of childhood. With marriage is the loss of singleness. With sexual intimacy is the loss of virginity. With the birth of a child is the loss of non-parent status. With gospel conversion is the loss of hopelessness and the past life. With Christmas or anniversary or birthday is the loss, it seems, of another year. Physical trauma, negative medical diagnoses, aging, death, all have their associated losses. And so it is with divorce. The victims of divorce may include not only the divorcees, but their relatives and their friends as well. God too grieves with us in our pain, but perhaps the greatest victims of divorce are the children. Different children respond in different ways to crises. Two children in the same family may react quite differently to the news that their parents are separating, or they're divorcing, gaining custody or access, or remarrying. However, children of similar ages do have almost typical ways of responding that are related to their stage of development. Now I want you to look at the overhead, and I'll read work through it. Preschool children have difficulty separating their own actions from those of their parents. For this reason, it's not uncommon for very young children to blame themselves for the separation. They frequently think, if I hadn't been so naughty, Daddy or Mummy wouldn't have gone away. Preschoolers therefore need lots of reassurance that this is not the case. They may become tearful and fearful that the parent will be let out of their sight in some way. They may revert to earlier patterns of behaviour, such as bedwetting, wanting a baby's bottle, or acting in a babyish manner. The most likely way that such a child will interpret the parent's actions is to believe, they don't love me anymore. In fact, one father would not contact or see his children because he thought it would upset them too much. He maintained that he was taking this action for their own good. His new wife begged him to see the children, as he would not even talk to them on the telephone. Children at this age may be upset by contact with the absent parent, and yet they may still desire, want, in fact need, this contact. Young primary age children are fiercely loyal and will try to defend the absent parent. Sometimes they will turn on the custodial parent, blaming him or her for driving the other parent out of the home. Their behaviour may degenerate as they become moody and suffer intense sadness. They too often believe that if the absent parent had really loved them, they wouldn't have left. Older primary age children may show intense anger toward a parent, while at the same time denying that the separation is upsetting them at all. For example, one child told his classmates that he was glad his father had left the family home, as he would now get two birthday presents instead of one from now on. Children at this age demonstrate bravado, while at times they expose their fears of the future. Some children deny the separation has happened at all. One child told his friends that he was living with his dad because his mother had died. His mother had, in fact, gone away to live with a former friend of the father. Primary age children may lack concentration, revert to earlier behaviour patterns, cry a lot, feel ill, and have more absences from school. Consequently, their schoolwork and grades may suffer, and they may not be as cooperative with the teaching staff. Adolescents, provided they're told the truth, are more able to understand the complexities of the separation and may see reasons why it has occurred. Although they are less likely to think that they caused the separation, they are nevertheless hurt and distressed by it. Adolescents frequently feel that the absent parent has deserted them and left them to take a major role in the household responsibilities. They are frequently concerned about their financial needs and often worry about their own future. Secondary children may also experience difficulty in applying themselves to their studies and may choose to skip classes, verbally abuse the teachers, or on some days, skip school altogether. Older children, even as adults, may be shattered if their parents separate, as the way they remember their childhood home becomes distorted. To visit a former household of one parent, where formerly there were two, can in itself be distressing. After a parent's remarriage, the son or daughter feels like a visitor in their childhood home. The divorcees themselves become victims of their circumstances due to, number one, practical problems, for example, financial arrangements, property settlements, child custody maintenance, assuming responsibility for the tasks that the former mate did. Usually alternative accommodation must be found and new social contacts established. That was the practical problems. And then there are the emotional problems. And these include feelings generated by your perception of this upsetting experience. These may include loneliness, anger, depression, jealousy, fear, longing, and grief. These intense negative emotions are quite normal and need only be for a short term. Many divorcees, though, report that they were able to cope with either the practical problems or the emotional problems, but not both at the same time. by identifying and addressing irrational beliefs about marriage, divorce or remarriage, then the burden is lessened. Society has negatively contributed to the victimisation of those associated with divorce in many ways, from the non-biblical stand of many churches on matrimonial absolutism to the facetiously called Family Law Act, which is designed, we're told, to ease the trauma of divorce by making divorce easier. Now we're going to divide up into small groups and discuss the question on our next overhead. Here we have the question, what is a broken home? It was quite an interesting discussion, wasn't it? You know, there's no such thing as a broken home, is there? Only broken marriages. People living together following separation and divorce are still a family unit. To suggest that a grieving family is any less of a family because one or more members are absent is to deny the privilege of the God-given gift of family life. True, it's often not the ideal, but it is still a family nevertheless. And children especially need to be reassured that their home life group is still a family, even though mum or dad may be living apart. Okay, let's continue by asking, who's to blame? The bottom line in every marital conflict, divorce or separation, is a breakdown in the fundamental communication and the fulfillment of expectations, desires, hopes, beliefs, aspirations or needs by both, rarely only one, of the partners. The children blame themselves for their parents' behaviour when they are clearly not to blame. Of course, parents themselves are good at blaming children for all sorts of things. "You made me angry," is frequently heard when they are provoked. "They didn't make you angry. You chose anger as a response to provocation." "You're driving me crazy." "They didn't drive you crazy. You chose to behave in a crazy manner because you can't cope, or you won't accept help in coping." "You stupid child, just look what you made me do." It isn't the child that's stupid, but the behaviour. The very behaviour which you claim is controlling you. Does that mean that you're allowing yourself to be controlled and manipulated by someone else's stupid behaviour? We won't admit that. So we blame the child. Children, don't ever blame yourself for your parents' divorce. Just as you didn't make them love each other in the beginning, you cannot have caused them to separate now. Just as God hasn't given you the power or the right to make them live happily ever after, you don't have the power or the right to keep them together, nor can you be expected to have the power to have driven them apart. It was their marriage. This is now their divorce. This was their conflict. This is now their outcome. It was their intimacy. This is now their estrangement. This was their problem, and this is now their solution. All this pain is not your fault. However, there are some things you children can do to make it easier. Here we have them on the board. Number one, be responsible. Don't give mum or dad extra pressure through unnecessary childishness. Sure, you're still a kid, but that doesn't mean you can't be a responsible kid. Number two, reassure your parents of their worth and value. If you're feeling pretty rotten just now, how do you think they feel? Giving up on marriage often causes adults to feel like a failure. They think that because in this one area of their life they have failed, they are a failure in everything. And here's where we can reassure them that they are still worthwhile and loved and have talents. They might even get the hint and remind you that you are worthwhile and loved and special to them. Number three, talk to them. Between you and me, let me just whisper that they're just as scared and frightened and worried and sad as you are. And while you're talking to them, why not even try listening to them too? Number four, admit that parents make mistakes. This will help them by taking the pressure off their need to put on a brave front, wear masks, or try to maintain a facade of parental perfection. Number five, encourage them to get professional counselling from their priest, their pastor, their rabbi, or a competent Christian counsellor. Counselling may not be for everyone, but at least encourage them to try. Professional counsellors may give advice, they may give direction, but more importantly, they know how to listen. Now we're going through this list of things that the children can do to make life a little easier. And we're up to number six, which is don't wear your parents' problems on your sleeve. Now this is just a fancy way of saying that just because your mum and dad are living apart, your home life group is still a family. Not completely whole, but completely wholesome. Not fully complete, but fully complementary. Not really broken, but really bonded. Not loss that's confounding, but love that's abounding. Not mourning the past, but moulding the future. Not using divorce as an excuse for your problems, but using your problems as an excuse to want to become a better person. And number seven, reach up. Prayer and meditation in the word of a God who cares can transform the hurt into healing. And now we come to address this question, why me? Hey, what have I done to deserve this? You've just said this isn't my fault. Why do I have to wear it? I'm not a glutton for punishment. Why me? I have two answers for this question. Neither of them may be completely adequate, but I'll try. Number one, life stinks because in life we have sin and sin stinks. You may then ask, where is God then? If God protected us from all the hurt in this wicked old world, we would all worship him for the wrong reason. One of the lovely and yet frustrating things about God is that he gives us freedom of choice. Hey, I didn't choose for mum and dad to separate. No, but neither did God force mum and dad not to. If God protected us from the consequences of the freedom of their choice, then their choice would have no freedom. Hey, but didn't I pray about it? Well, yes, but just maybe God has answered your prayers in a way you didn't expect, by allowing you to grow and learn from the consequences of another's choices, to strengthen in you the resolve to make wise choices of your own when your turn comes. Or Maybe to preserve their freedom of choice, he's had to withhold your desired answer to prayer. Remember, there are no unanswered prayers. Sorry, there may be unanswered prayers, but there are no unanswered prayers. Now, the second response to this question, why me, is to ask, why not me? What makes me so special that I should be immune from the problem of sin in this world? Because this world is filled with sin, unhappiness is common to those who live in it. Everyone experiences pain for a little while at some time, and just now it's your turn. Even when things are not our fault, we can often, to a certain degree, control the amount of sadness we suffer by the choices we make. We can choose to have an RMA or not. RMA stands for Rotten Mental Attitude. We're not going to get past this pain unscathed, but that doesn't mean we have to make it any worse by trashing the teacher or the pastor, by taking out our frustrations on the cat or the neighbour's flower garden, or ourselves. One way to look at this is to accept that if I'm going to have pain, I might just as well learn something from it. Maybe because of my pain I can be more help to others who are hurting. Maybe my response can be a Christian witness because of my right mental attitude and my Christian faith. Maybe God can use this experience to draw me closer to Him. Maybe if I don't know God yet, He can use this experience to bring me to trust Him. And now we come to this aspect of choosing sides. Little Johnny said that when his parents fought, he felt like he was cowering under an umbrella while they flung mud at each other. Everyone verbally assured him, "We're on your side." But Dad's relatives were on Dad's side and Mum's relatives were on her side. To compound this even more, Johnny was expected, when Mum and Dad split up, to choose between them which one to live with. How could he choose and not feel that he was rejecting one and accepting the other? To make things a little easier, here are some guidelines. Number one, accept that you are not the cause of their argument, even if you may be the topic of the discussion. There are ways to communicate other than mudslinging, and you are not responsible for causing them to communicate that way. Number two, take time to talk to them about your fears and concerns. Tell them how it hurts to hear them tearing each other apart as you love them both. Number three, try to see both their good points as well as their faults. Neither of them is a god. They both make mistakes. And the blame is rarely ever upon one person. Now, having looked at their good and bad points, choose not to get into discussions about comparisons. The good and the bad things about either of them and the reasons for the failure in their marriage and with whom the fault of the divorce lies is for you to figure out on your own. For anyone else to tell you their answers won't help you. Because number one, you won't want to believe them. And number two, their prejudice may only make you feel anger toward them. If they insist on starting conversations which smudge each other, tell them gently that you love them both and that you feel hurt when they throw dirt at each other. By assuring them that they both have qualities you admire, you will not only give them the confidence that you love them, but they may also be able to see the awkward position that their bickering has put you sandwiched between the two of them. If for custody reasons you have to choose between the two of them, like little Johnny, approach it logically. Talk with a friend whom you can trust, but don't expect them to decide for you. Then make a list of the positive and the negative aspects of each environment and weigh carefully and prayerfully the pros and cons. Remember that non-custodial parent, that's the one you're not living with, will inevitably appear more fun than the one you are with most of the time. The one who visits, buys gifts, or takes you on outings, because of their not needing to take most of the responsibility for you in the same way, will be less inclined to appear bossy, a worrywart, demanding, dictatorial, and all the other things we full-time parents seem to be guilty of. Then, having made your decision, one of the most important things you can do for them is to tell each parent that you love him or her. It would be easy for one to feel rejected and unloved if he wanted you to live with him and you chose the other parent. Let's spend a few moments now discussing the in-laws and the other outlaws. In-laws are the ex-partner's parents, and your parents become regarded as outlaws. Genesis 2:24 says, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and they shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." As I said earlier, the bottom line in every marital conflict, divorce, separation, is a breakdown in the fundamental communication and fulfillment of the expectations, desires, hopes, beliefs, aspirations, or need of each of the partners. It's therefore essential to communicate to the parents of the couple that although in some cases their interference may have been a contributing factor, they are not to blame. And blame they often are if they're denied access to their grandchildren. This is one of the cruelest things a divorced couple can do to their parents. You divorced him, not his family. You separated from her, not her family. One of the saddest books I have read recently is entitled Why Can't I Sleep at Nana's Anymore? In it, Australian author Leila Friedman shares the dilemmas of that death and divorce bring to grandparents who are suddenly considered not part of the family anymore. Only one chapter out of 18 shares some happy endings. Friedman does, however, share some practical advice. Maybe some of this advice is for others of us too. Number one, don't panic. Somebody has to keep calm. Number two, don't indulge in recriminations, even if the two parties directly concerned don't know the real reasons for the breakdown. There are probably faults on both sides, or on neither. And you can support your child by not making judgments. Thirdly, to you grandparents, parents, in-laws and outlaws, don't waste time on self-pity. Some will say, "It took me a good 12 months to get over my son's divorce." Others will say, "I'll never get over it." You can waste time and effort feeling sorry for yourself when your adult child needs you now as much as at any other time in his or her life. Number four, try and diffuse the bitterness. Tragedies and violence in the wake of family court decisions must be avoided at all costs. Fifthly, if your son or daughter is the one who has been deserted, Remember that their self-esteem will be at an all-time low. Build it up again by showing them that they are still loved and respected by others. The situation is a blow from which they will eventually recover and perhaps make a better life for themselves. If your child has broken the marriage, try and accept the fact calmly. Showing your disapproval or talking about the family disgrace is counterproductive and may cause a rift between the generations. Number 7, keeping in balance the things that we've been saying, try your utmost to see that the children suffer as little as possible. Number 8, it would be unwise to seek legal action for custody of your grandchildren, as there's no specific legislation at the moment. This is 1997. Covering grandparent access. Even one letter from your solicitor can turn the custodial parent against you. The grandparents are not entitled to legal aid in custody battles, although if you do have major concern, legislation now will allow access to the Family Court Counselling Service. Number 9, if you have reason to suspect that the children are being physically or sexually abused by the custodial parent and the other parent's not available, contact the local police who will visit the house and make sure that the children are all right. And number 10, if the children are being abused by a custodial parent, you may legally apply for custody. This has been granted in cases where the children were at risk, provided in the eyes of the court the grandparents were young enough and had a suitable environment. Number 11, never give up hope of seeing your grandchildren again. Many children express that they wish to contact grandparents, so keep sending those birthday cards, even if the presents are returned unopened. Children may just see the mail and know that they're not forgotten. If your son or daughter has custody of the children, finally, please try and see that they are kept in touch with the other grandparents. And now we come to the part that many of you have been waiting for: coping skills. I've sort of subtitled this segment, Faith in the Face of Fear. To help us to remember the suggestions for developing coping skills, we're going to use an acronym, Coping Skills, COPINGSKILLS. The letter C is to seek support and counsel from those around you. One of the greatest assets we can have at this time is the support of well-chosen friends. Be fussy with whom you share, but once you have found a friend, be a friend in order to keep your friend. O for opening up the channels of communication with your parents. Talk to them if you're the child of divorce, or talk to your children if you are the parent. Each of you will have your fears and concerns, your confusion, your hurt, and sharing these things may help you both. The letter P is for pitch in and help. All of a sudden, the great mound of chores that make the house run smoothly will become an Everest. There may be less people to do them, and some you may not now know how to do. Helping out doesn't eliminate the frustration, but it sure reduces it. If you don't know, ask. If you can't do it, seek help. If it won't work, read the manual. If you've never done it before, give it a go. If you think it's not your job, think again. If you want to feel helpless, do nothing. If you want to achieve at least something of normality in the home, pitch in and help. The letter I is to invite God in. I'm not going to use this seminar as a pushy excuse to give a sermon, and yet as a Christian I feel a responsibility to recommend that at least give God an equal hearing. The letter N is to develop new hobbies and interests. While avoiding the temptation to get into such a frenzy that you don't have time to think about yourself, your family, divorce, or anything else, now is the time to get your mind busy. There's nothing worse when some disaster crops up and whacks you on the head than to mope around. Join a club, get a hobby, get a job, study a new subject. Activity to stop you wasting away on the inside. Activity to develop you into a more interesting and exciting person. Activity to keep your mind off how you would like to cry, jump off a cliff, sit in your room and pout. Even though you have reason to, please don't just sit around and be depressed. Why waste your precious life on a moping binge when there are so many other exciting things you could be doing? The letter G is to grieve. Now, having said what I've said, I need to remind you that it's okay to cry. You may not feel comfortable crying in front of friends or even family or before strangers, but it is okay to cry. I don't mean you have to cry in front of everybody, but crying is a necessary part of your grief work. It's okay to grieve. You have experienced a loss, and crying is a necessary part of grieving. It hurts, doesn't it? Then why bottle up the tears? If you want to know more about grieving, we have a cassette tape entitled Practical Help for the Grieving, for helping those that are grieving, and self-help for the grieving. The letter S. You know, friends are very important, and it's difficult to handle any crisis without them. For the letter S, we suggest seeking out new friends. You will have no doubt find, as many have, that when the going gets shaky, the shaky get going. Friends you thought you could count on suddenly disappear. But Providence has a way of bringing new friends out of hiding, even if you have to look for them. Maybe even that person you least expect would be inclined toward you, could become your closest friend. The letter K is for knowing what to expect. And this takes the edge off the trauma. Know that when your family splits up, you will feel fear and uncertainty. Know that you will have an identity change as your family circumstances change. Know that you may feel like blaming yourself, and others too may blame you for your circumstances. Know what to do with blame and other irrational beliefs. Know that the period just before divorce is scary, painful, uncertain. Know that divorce will make you feel afraid, afraid of your changing self, and afraid of your future. Know that when your security is shaken, it is only transitory. Know that grief is a process we all experience when we have any significant loss. Know that healing takes time and that crying is nature's balm. know that you are not alone in feeling this way, and that you need not ever experience it alone. Know that circumstances change, people change, yes, even we change, but God never changes. The letter I. You know, now might be an ideal time to instigate some new family traditions. For example, some people like to have their Friday evening meal by candlelight. This becomes a tradition which will give us happy memories to cling on to and sustain us in times of loneliness later on. Another tradition could be a picnic or barbecue on, say, the first Sunday of each month, moving indoors if it's raining. You can personalise them, and if you can, so much the better. And don't forget to keep up your traditions when you're travelling on holidays. It can certainly add to the fun and the development of memory events. For the letter L, I suggest that there are many ways of making separation bearable, and one of these is a look forwards list. What this simply means is that you budget for little treats on a regular basis. These need not cost any money, and could be something such as visiting a friend once a week for lunch, watching videos together, maybe going for a country drive or a picnic. These things should be, number one, fun, and number two, something different to change your routine. The letter L is for, this is our second letter L, is for learn. If you're going to go through all this suffering, why not learn something from this experience? Now, I can hear some of you right now saying, I don't want to learn from the pain, I want to be rid of it. I don't want to learn from this terrible experience, I just want to curl up and ignore it. But there is wisdom in this unnatural response. If you're going to have all this pain, why not gain something useful from it? What pregnant mother would go through all the pain of childbirth if it were not for the anticipated reward of having a baby? Don't let your discomfort go to waste. Ask yourself, what does all this experience teach me about marriage? What do I learn about love? How can I avoid a repeat of this trauma in the future? What can I learn from others' experiences as they cope with their hurt and pain? S. Yes, finally, share. Share the positive things you have learned with others who are grieving. Your experience, however painful, is your best qualification when it comes to helping others with similar hurt. Now we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes, and when we come back, we're going to have a word to the parents.